Welcome to Looks Like New. I'm Adina Glickstein, a master's student in media studies at CU Boulder. Looks Like New is a production of the Media Economies Design Lab, where I serve as a research assistant. Every month, this show asks old questions about new technology. Today, we're getting into the wild world of social media and exploring some alternatives to the increasingly chaotic mainstream. From Meta to X to TikTok, social media sites have been in the news quite a bit lately. It has become impossible to ignore that these platforms are political battlegrounds, and it feels like the average user has little power to shape their policies. From content moderation and fact-checking to opaque algorithms, advertising, and surveillance, users are beholden to bear the consequences of the decisions that these platforms and the few billionaires in charge of them unilaterally make. But what if it were possible to build and grow an online community outside the confines of corporate platforms? In recent years, a new crop of social networking tools and protocols has emerged, offering alternatives to dominant mainstream players like X or Meta. From Mastodon to Blue Sky and Matrix to Noster, these alternatives are open source and place power back in users' own hands so that they can communicate online using tech that truly shares and embodies their values. It can be intimidating, though, to walk away from the familiarity of dominant platforms, especially when the companies that run them go to such great lengths to maintain their monopolies on our attention. The challenge, then, lies in empowering people with keen community-building know-how and on-the-ground organizing chops with the tools to start new online spaces. That's where MedLab's Open Social Incubator comes in. Over the course of 5 months, community organizers from around the world are participating in a peer-to-peer learning cohort through MedLab, where they grow their understanding of the social and technical needs involved in shifting towards open social networks. Today's episode of Looks Like New is a recording from one of the Open Social Incubator's meetings. In this session, three guests joined us to share more about the possibilities and affordances of an open social protocol that they are each deeply involved with. Rudy Fraser joined us to talk about Black Sky, the alternative to Black Twitter, which he has been building on Blue Sky. Rabble, a former Twitter dev turned decentralized social media builder, shared insight into Noster. And Christine Lemmer-Weber, the executive director of the Sprightly Institute, gave an introduction to the ActivityPub protocol, which she co-authored. After hearing from each of these experts about the alternative social platforms and protocols that they've lovingly cultivated, we hope that you too might feel empowered and inspired to explore the vast wealth of possibilities for cultivating online community on infrastructure that users truly own and control. So, without further ado, let's get into it.
To get this started, we're going to have some short talks from three really extraordinary people who've been deep in the work of building open social networks for a long time and doing really extraordinary things with it. And they're going to just share a bit about what the spaces they've been involved in can enable as a way of getting a kind of broad range of possible options for the kinds of spaces that people can build community in open social networks. First, we have Rudy Fraser, who is working on Black Sky. He's a developer and mutual aid activist. Black Sky is a really important part of the Blue Sky ecosystem that is specifically oriented around Black users and Black voices. I also have gotten to know Rudy as the founder of Papertree, which is a really innovative platform for community funding and governance. So he's doing a lot of good stuff around the question of how to build, you know, power and community online. Next, we have Rabble, or Evan Henshaw-Plath, who was Twitter's first lead developer. And since then, they've been a leader in decentralized social media, including through Planetary, which was around the secure Scuttlebutt ecosystem, and now Nos Social, which is part of the Noster ecosystem. And then finally, Christine Lemmer-Weber, who is a leading author and editor of the ActivityPub protocol. which is probably best known for its for being the underlying protocol for Mastodon. But Christine has been involved in a lot of other work around ActivityPub and around open social networks. She's currently executive director of the Sprightly Institute, which is building new social tools on ActivityPub. So they can correct me if I messed anything up, but we'll go in that order if that's all right. Rudy, do you want to take it away?
Sure. Thank you. So I'm Rudy. I'm the founder of Black Sky. I'm based in Brooklyn, New York. I'm a native New Yorker, born and raised, but the first person in my family born in America. Everyone else is from Guyana and largely still there. I started, like Nathan had mentioned, I have been a community organizer for with We the People NYC and a few different local Brooklyn mutual aid groups for a few years. I also work at Kadala. I think I saw that you worked at collaborate with like Open Collective. Like the my project Paper Tree is like kind of like hacking on top of Open Collective. And that's kind of been my like MO for, I mean, generally. My background is 10 years in enterprise IT. Enterprise IT consulting is what pays the bills thus far. Yeah, I started working on Black Sky actually because there was a situation where the first iteration V1 Paper Tree was like trying to make a community bank account, and my bank account ended up getting shut down. Then there was like a gap between what I was, the early version of Paper Tree, and what it became, which is like what it is now is pretty cool. But I was trying to create a community bank account for all of Bed-Stuy, the first version. Second version is used by a nonprofit to do kind of this like universal basic income kind of effort. And Susu's. And so in the time period between then, I had signed up for Blue Sky, and I thought it was a cool idea because of the concept of custom feeds. So I've always had an interest in having more control over my social media experience. And I really hate, like, I always give the example for folks, like I have like I use two different Gmail accounts with YouTube. One I watch music videos on, the other I watch documentaries, because if you try to intermix those two, they don't understand that you have multitudes. And they end up messing stuff up. And similarly with Instagram. What I found with a lot of folks was they join Blue Sky and join Black Sky. It's a very different experience for people because they're used to having to like train the algorithm to show them the things that they want. So they'll say a bunch of stuff, or they'll try to like engage with different content to get them to show it. And so they get really excited about being able to see like, oh, you can just like tune into the algorithm you wanted. Over time, I think the vision for Black Sky has grown a lot. And the way I look at it now is fostering community around, well, an important thing like Black Sky is the community of Black users on Blue Sky. I separate that from like Black Sky algorithms, which is like the team and devs and moderators who help create the tooling and technology that enable that community. And the framework beneath it is a open source implementation of app protocol called Risky. So it's a Rust-based implementation of Blue Sky's protocol. And I basically kind of have this idea that I could build safety tools into Blue Sky's framework in order to like foster safer community building for marginalized users. And that could be applied to anyone, but kind of like using it with Black Sky in mind first. So a lot of the stuff I built it with Black Sky's use cases, but then we found that like other communities have taken interest in it. And I would say there's a question of like, what affordances does the platform that you use enable that maybe other places, centralized services certainly don't. So one thing, I've built different algorithms off of Black Sky. So there's the main feed is a feed of content from Black users. There's a version of it that is Black Sky trending that is the same subset of users, but it's the stuff that is getting more likes and reshares and that kind of thing. So you have a chronological feed, which people really like having a chronological feed. And then you have a trending if you want to just get more of an abbreviated view of what's going on. So being able to craft those custom feeds is really important. And, you know, there's nuances and complexities. And it's really whatever you like it. I think that's something that people don't really understand around custom feeds. So you can make it whatever you want it to be. And so speaking to y'all as community builders, like something that I considered with it is like, what kind of experience am I trying to create and foster a community around? Blue Sky, for example, is right now there's no private state, although they want to have private accounts and things like that in the future. Everything is public. It's a public conversation. And so that's something to consider, like, can your community be public and visible? Some communities maybe should not. I made an assumption that with Black users and Black American users, at the very least, we want to be public, and we want for people to see us, and we want to express ourselves. And there's just a concern about safety, because whenever Black folks start gathering in a very public way, there's just folks who feel threatened and attack that. And I found very early on that happened. So basically, like, I launched the first V1, say, of the Black Sky custom feeds. And very shortly after, there were like trolls trying to harass. There's some ways that I built Black Sky. So like, you can basically use a hashtag to add yourself into the feed to kind of opt in, right? So there's not like an assumption being made of Blackness. It's like you've opted in, you've signaled that you want to be included as a part of this. And so there's people who like add themselves to troll, right? That started happening pretty early on. And something that no one else has done with custom feeds that I did was prevent people from being able to view the feed. So it's public by default, but I built in a system that says that, like, it's, I call it banned from TV. And so if you've kind of signaled that you'd be a threat to Black Sky, I'm able to prevent you from even accessing the feed. And so that's kind of some of those ways, like you build the custom feed to foster community around, but you can also kind of hack in these like safety features too. And there's a bunch of, there's probably like 100 rule list of stuff that I have running to remove content from the feed automatically. And then for anything that doesn't get picked up by all this, the other really cool thing about App Protocol is you can choose who does your moderation for you. So with Black Sky's user base, there's folks who are using the custom feeds, and then there's some folks who maybe they don't use the custom feeds, but they benefit from being able to select Black Sky as the moderators, because we're able to then provide context-aware moderation for those users. So Blue Sky may not recognize that something would be harmful. We particularly address anti-Blackness, anti-Black harassment, and misogynoir. Misogynoir is the intersection of misogyny and anti-Blackness that is particularly would affect Black women. We also include trans women as a part of that. So trans misogynoir. And so you don't have to use the feed per se, but if you encounter any content like that, you can report it to us, and then we can take different actions. So we could put that person on a block list. We could ban them from TV so they don't have access to the feed. We can label the content so you can choose to filter it out or not. And we can take those actions faster than Blue Sky can. And because they're dealing with the whole network, right? And they're dealing with stuff that we wouldn't handle, like CSAM or extremist content. But we just particularly address anti-Blackness. And yeah, I think I'm getting close on time. The community has grown quite a bit. We're getting close. We probably around 900,000 subscribers to the feed. There's tons of folks who use the moderation service. We've been able to scale that up and grow without having to like build up any other infrastructure. It's just really like, I explain to folks, like, Black Sky is like a back-end application, largely. I don't have to build front-end stuff. And yeah, our mod tools are used by like celebrities and politicians who are using Blue Sky. So the adoption of being able to just like join Blue Sky and then tap into Black Sky to the point where people think it's just a native part of the app, and the latest Black Twitter migration thought that I worked for Blue Sky, and I had to clarify that because it just seems like it all is a part and cohesive. There's lots of other nuanced and interesting things, but I guess I'll leave it there. Also, yeah, the code beneath Black Sky is open source, and we're on Open Collective, fiscally hosted by Open Source Collective, because I think with community building, you have to also think about like, how do you fund your work? And so that's through there. We actually are now getting around $2,100 a month in donations for like a $44,000 annual budget. I believe in paying moderators, where Black moderators moderating anti-Black content is traumatizing work. And so definitely want folks to be compensated for that. The servers cost money as well. But I, and then I think there's just like something that I think is interesting maybe for is like it raises when you're putting yourself in this position to like do something like this, you, I think it unlocks like it begs the question of someone asked me this the other day of like, are you kind of like speaking for a community, right? Like, you know, I make it very clear that I speak for Black Sky algorithms. I don't speak for Black Sky as a community. There are biases in how like the algorithms work and how we do moderation, and we're like getting systems together in place. But because of the scope of the work that we do and the visibility of it, it's like something that I personally keep in mind of like, you know, you become responsible for what a large number of people see and interact with and the experience that they have. So I think that's less talked about on the dev, with the dev crowd on Blue Sky, but I think about it pretty often on the community building side.
Thank you so much, Rudy. Ravel, can we turn over to you?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, Nathan, thanks so much for organizing this. I think that the idea of figuring out how communities use these projects and where is the important part. You know, Nathan said a little bit about my background. I have been working on building various different social software apps for 30 years now. I did a bunch of community apps in the 1990s and helped start this activist network called Indie Media in 1999. We did the first live stream of a protest. At the WTO protest in 1999. I helped create podcasting with Odeo and helped create Twitter. And then for the last 15 years ago, I've been trying to figure out how to undo the enclosing of the commons that happened as Twitter consolidated under market control. What I think is really important before I get into sort of the projects I'm working on today is realize that we need to not be technologically deterministic. Like how people use the software, how people are using these systems doesn't always align with the way the software is designed. You can use Instagram to organize events. You can use, like, it's not meant for that, but it works. And so how people are using it is different than what they're doing it. You know, Twitter's groups and communities are fairly informal in that you don't join a Twitter, you know, you don't join, you know, the queer Twitter community. You just start following a whole bunch of people and you get incorporated into these sets of conversations. But many other systems have stronger sets of ideas of this is the boundaries of a community. And some of the stuff that Rudy's doing with the feeds around communities in Blue Sky is making that even more clear because you can follow a set of people. There's a set of follow sort of packets of people you can follow. When Twitter funded Blue Sky initially, I was part of some of those discussions. One of the things that was discussed was the company can't make the right moderation decisions. They can't make the right control decisions, and it wasn't supposed to be controlled by it. So the whole point of all these open networks is trying to get us out of that and get us out of the sort of a single company that can control this space. The last couple years, I've been working on this protocol. I'm going to try and, yeah. So Nostr is a protocol that under the hood is very similar to Blue Sky, except that it's not, there's no company behind it. And there's a set of user bases who sort of see it as really competitive, but the people who work on it don't really. There's just a larger community of people who are trying to build open social apps. And they, you know, they interact with each other and they collaborate in ways that are possible. So some of them are very Twitter-like. This is the app that I built that gives you a Twitter-like feed where you can post content and you can choose feeds and similar to with Blue Sky, there's custom feeds and lists and things like that. But the other place that that Noster really stands out is Blue Sky is focused really well on solving the problem of the microblogging and solving the problem of giving people an open alternative to what has become Twitter. And Noster has moved in the direction of creating an ecosystem for many different kinds of apps. And so just to sort of wrap up and not take too much time, here's an example of sort of all of the different Noster apps. And so what you can do is you'd be like, okay, I want to do, you know, I want a Pinterest-like app where I could post content and then I can, you know, I can log in and then I can see content from my friends and what they're posting. Or, you know, a visual photo sharing app where you're looking at a feed of different kinds of content across the network. And all of these apps might be hosted at different domain names, but they pull down from the same set of data behind it. A few of the other apps here, there's you know, we have a bunch of groups. We have sort of the same similar thing of custom feeds, reverse chronological sort of social media posts. One of the things that Noster does is that it is not trying to optimize for that big group conversation. And the big group conversation is what makes the prioritization of public content. And so inside Noster, we have the ability to have end-to-end encrypted private groups using something called MLS, which is a signal-like protocol. And so you can join all these different private groups and see discussions of people in the groups. And you can use this for a bunch of different apps. Very quickly, there's, you know, long form blogging content that users could use. There's different apps to display the same kind of content. There's a bunch of things that you don't normally think of as social apps. Like there's cooking apps where, you know, you can go in and you can be collaborative editing of recipes. There's sort of people who do live streaming stuff. There's a collaborative document editing system that gives Wiki, but it's subjective. So each person is being able to edit it collaboratively and gives you like an open Google Docs. I don't know what this lives like. There's a Clubhouse-like thing. One of the more interesting projects is this thing called Trust Roots, which is a community that's been around for about a decade, and it's an alternative to couch surfing. And the creators were worried that if they disappeared or ran out of energy using it, that the network would go offline. And so they ported it over to Noster so that you could see the network running, even if the people building it had stopped doing it. There's ability to view people's personal websites around it. Basically, the idea is that instead of trying to solve the problem of let's have the big public conversation and what the feed algorithm is, Noster has sort of evolved in the direction of how do we build a social app platform? And I'm sorry, I forgot to put a timer on, so I have no idea how long I've been talking. But I wanted to point that out because I think that one of the things we are trying to solve with Noster is in the Fediverse, you can have a Mastodon account that is a microblogging type feed, and then you could have a Write Freely account, which is a long form blogging account, and then you could have the photo sharing or the video apps or Molazon, which is like a meetup like events app. But your users and your communities of your username and your users of each of those apps aren't the same. You don't get to reuse them. And so they're all using the same protocol, but you don't get to reuse who you're following. You don't get to, you know, be able to say, okay, here's my Twitter-like feed. Here is a link to a meetup style event, which you can go in then and then see a bunch of other events. And so one of the things we're trying to do is solve that disassociative stuff and try and build something that allows for private communication instead of just the public stuff. So with that, I'll hand it over back. I think Christine's going to talk about her attempts to do very similar ways of solving some of the limitations of ActivityPub so that we can have a bunch of different apps interact with each other. And I'm happy to talk with people offline more about it and other protocols. And I'm fairly agnostic about which ones are the right ones for different communities to reuse. What I'm really passionate about, and I think we should all remember, is that we don't want to repeat the mistakes of trusting Facebook to own and control our social spaces, where they're like, just trust us, use the Facebook groups, use the, you know, post here, post on Instagram, we'll decide for you. And then they decide that they just want to like downrake all political content, or you post to your Facebook group or your Facebook page and no one sees it. And so the most important thing is we don't get stuck in that mistake again.
Thank you, Ravel. Christine, it's all you.
All right, let's see if I can share this thing. I'm also gonna just open up a browser and just kind of click through some tabs. I think it's a great presentation style, by the way. I'm Christine Lemmer-Weber. I'm the executive director of the Sprightly Institute. We're doing, you know, we decided ourselves as doing next generation decentralized networking technology. Of course, people coming here are pretty tuned into that type of work. I'm gonna mention, since we're in the middle of it, we're doing a fundraiser campaign right now. If you feel generous, you can support us or at least tell people about it. But we get, you know, we're a research institute and we position ourselves as a research institute for the web, for the next generation of network stuff. And sometimes actually it can be a little bit, we've spent some time working on some very low level stuff in terms of technology to enable some higher level stuff. So a lot of what I hope to talk about here today is a little bit of what that low level stuff is, but that we're not just a low level organization and why we're doing that. So I really appreciated earlier that Rudy was talking about the need to have, enjoyed, you know, using multiple identities for multiple kind of purposes. And then Rabble talked about the attempts to do that in Nostr and et cetera as well. And that's actually one of the core things we're also doing in Sprightly. So this is our friend Alicia. These are mock-ups of kind of some of the direction we're going to for the high level user interfaces. We're doing, since we've been focused on lower level stuff, a lot of our higher level stuff is in mock-ups at the moment, but we're actually changing that starting 2025. But for the moment, you know, this is kind of the vision of it, right? Alicia is, she's not, as a person, she actually has multiple communities she engages with. And so in her application, she can kind of click in the top and select between, you know, as Ms. A. Nim, she might be a math teacher. And as A. Starlight, she's playing games with her friends. And as A. Penn, she's a fan fiction author. And really, you know, Alicia, the person, is, you know, a multifaceted person. And she has these different identities online, these different personas, and not everybody might know her as the same thing, right? And I could go more into kind of the high level vision of where things are going. We do have some higher level applications that we've demoed some things for, but what I'm really more interested in talking about is, why is it that we're doing the low level research? Why do we go so hardcore into the research end of things? So my background is, as mentioned previously, on ActivityPub, which is the protocol that Mastodon and a bunch of other things use to connect together the Fediverse. And this has had a lot of success. I'm not the only person who worked on it. There was a number of people who worked on it. I think the spec is pretty friendly to read and kind of explains how it works. But there are a number of things that the Fediverse can't do. I would like to be able to have more secure content. I would like people to have better control over their identity. And when nodes go down, to be able to move around very easily. And I'd really like to focus on something that we call a secure collaboration. And it's kind of a space of rich interactions that are hard to do in a lot of contemporary social network stuff. And so actually, a few years ago, I got really worried about the direction that the Fediverse was heading in terms of moderation. In many ways, I think the Fediverse's moderation tools are better than a lot of other things that exist. I'm very excited about the work happening on Black Sky, as I said in the chat. But I think in general, a lot of in a lot of systems today, people don't have a lot of strong moderation tools. And the direction that people by default go, and that happened on the Fediverse, is this idea of, let's set up an instance and this will be the security model for this particular instance. This is what ended up happening with the Fediverse, and it wasn't kind of the direction that we envisioned. And so kind of in this document, I explained, okay, well, here's the direction I'm worried it's going to go, and started to lay out, and here's how we're going to build it and everything in terms of the stuff. And a lot of the response we got was, well, we don't know how to build that on top of our application, actually. You know, Mastodon already exists, already got a sizable code base, and it's actually very difficult for us to kind of conceive of how to be able to build something like this at all, even though the idea seemed pretty good, and even though we're able to talk about what the low-level tech would end up looking like. And to a certain extent, this is actually because the technology that we have, while I agree that the technology that we have is not, technologically absolutist or whatever the term was that Rebel used, where you, I think technological determinism, where you have this low-level tech and then it's going to go in this particular direction. I do believe that what's available is actually emergent from the tech that you have. And oftentimes the underlying assumptions of the tech that's built can inform what is possible. So, right, Mastodon's built on top of Ruby on Rails, and noticeably, this is the catchphrase on Ruby on Rails' website, Ruby on Rails scales from hello world to IPO, right? You have this vision that you're building something for kind of a for-profit kind of Web 2.0 use case, and you're going to end up, your applications are kind of expecting that type of thing. And it makes actually building things in other directions, sometimes, you're actually pushing against the grain. So one of the things that we've been working on is this thing called Goblins. It's a distributed transactional programming environment, and it changes the game in terms of how your programs work. Default, when you write a program on top of this tech, it's peer-to-peer, it's end-to-end encrypted, it is, and it allows for secure collaboration in a way so that all applications can be secure and collaborative and peer-to-peer without the user actually even having to understand all the details of how all of that works. And so sometimes actually, since that sounds completely overwhelming, the easiest way to show people is to show a demo application when you're not at the full social thing. So when I say that Goblins is transactional, for instance, here's a little space shooter I wrote, runs in a developer's terminal, and you can see this person booting up the game, they're playing it. The important thing is not the space shooter, the important thing is the transactionality. Well, what is transactionality if it's unlimited? It's time travel. And here you can see in this application that we can move backwards and forwards in time. And this actually just falls out of the program. No gameplay code was written to be able to support this type of thing. And this actually is really important because it's actually very hard to debug a lot of contemporary asynchronous peer-to-peer applications. And so we've been doing things to be able to make it so that this type of stuff, it falls out naturally. So we have this protocol called OCAPN. It gives the security properties and it gives the peer-to-peer stuff that you expect. But what's interesting is that the users don't actually have to understand or know about this at all. It just happens under the hood. We as protocol authors need to know about it, but users can just write their programs and then things just work. We also have things like a distributed time traveling debugger. We have this example on our site where, there's this complicated multi-user dungeon that somebody's building, and they can't find out why they supposedly killed a creature and it didn't die. And then Goblins, right from the developer terminal, will actually create a visualization for you without leaving your developer programming environment of how the thing ended up happening. And we also are trying to work on things like, for example, persistence, so that when you don't actually have to focus on building the persistence aspect, it just serializes and whoosh, you've got your serialized application. And once again, I'm going to show off the space shooter thing here, right? The user saves and they're able to resume the game. And then close, open it back up. And what's interesting is that unlike in like kind of contemporary programming environments, you don't actually have to focus on having this separate layer between your database and the rest of your application. This actually comes by default. So we have things like, for example, a 150-line peer-to-peer demo chat room. It doesn't mention the network at all. It gets the connectivity to be able to do the communication by default. Once again, I know I'm speaking very low level here, but one of the reasons it's taken so long to kind of get some of these things to users, even though I think our tech has been pretty revolutionary, is that we're developing in a programming language that's not JavaScript, right? And up until now, if you're not using JavaScript, it's actually not really possible to be able to get your applications to users. But here we've been developing we use this parenthetical language called Scheme. I'm going to type some math, and it works here in the browser. This is all in WebAssembly because we've been working on a toolkit to get our stuff in the browser. I sometimes like to show things off with games. So here is an example of a little video game that's built on top of our tooling. And I can play this game, but I can do something that where I can't recover from. I can no longer get this block out of this corner. But I can time travel backwards. And once again, no special code was added to this. I'm able to beat the thing. But the interesting thing about this demo is that this is actually running in the browser using our tech. And so this was kind of one of our early demos of that. Next month, we're planning on having our first major release of Goblins running in the browser. And so a lot of this, like what's Sprightly doing? Like it seems like this is like this nerdy, weird, low-level tech, but who's actually using it? And then when we're like, oh, let's show you, we show you a video game, right? So the 2025, a lot of that is going to be about that actually reaching users in a big way. I think I'm getting close to where I am on time. I think maybe one of the most interesting things that we did recently was write up what some of our values are, but I'm just going to stop here and say, you know, if you want to support our fundraiser, you can. But most importantly, I'm just going to say that sometimes I think in order to actually to build new systems, it takes some time to actually do research to be able to build foundations. When we were working on ActivityPub, it was impossible for me to explain to people why ActivityPub was important. People would say, what? Like, you know, like we're, I'm like, we're going to build just, you know how anybody can run, you might be able to talk to each other from different email servers. We're going to do that, but for social networks. And people are like, I don't get it. That doesn't seem possible, right? And then once ActivityPub exists, people are like, oh, of course, you know, like decentralized social networks, of course, this is a thing that exists, right? You have to get to the point where people can actually experience things. So Sprightly has been spending a lot of time laying down new foundations so that people can experience this. And so 2025, I hope you'll join us in a lot of the work that we're going to be doing in seeing how we'll be able to actually get a lot more of this stuff into the hands of enthusiasts and kind of have some experiences that people really weren't able to previously conceive as being able to happen in distributed networks previously.
Wonderful. Thank you, all three of you, for sharing a bit of an intro to the work you're doing. I want to just turn it over to the cohort. What do you want to bring up? Any comments, questions for the folks we've heard from? Where do these stories and these projects sit with the kinds of things you're trying to do? Shadrach, go ahead.
Yes, so I, you know, used to have all the time I have this thing I've been thinking of, like, you know, the internet came into existence, you know, with the vision or with the purpose of it being like open to everyone, and no one was thinking about like privacy and you know, making much profit out of the internet. Yeah, so I'm you know, wondering the, you know, future of decentralization. So wouldn't people like now start to use these platforms and then try to find some way around it, and then now people are making money out of it? Yeah, so like that's something like I've been wondering about, which I would like to find an answer, though there are protocols that are making sure that, you know, this doesn't happen. But you know, as technology keeps on evolving, you know, people are trying to find ways to circumvent certain things and all that. So like this is what I would like to also know. And yeah, and also know the technical stuff within this cohort as well. Thank you.
I could give it a shot. I think what I hear, I think is like a concern about value extraction and capture on like in something that could be decentralized, which I feel like Blue Sky probably has the like biggest risk of that's the common critique, at least. I will say that I don't think funding and money is in itself like a bad thing. Like servers cost money, and cloud servers for sure cost money. So I think if you can find ways that I believe personally in just like finding ways that you could like a human scale set of funding is like, for example, like again, like Black Sky takes donations, but it's really just a contribution. It's just like pay because you find value in this and pay on a recurring basis. So we have like some expectations that the funds will keep coming in and moderators will get paid and servers will get paid. Value extraction, I've personally been like, I think an interesting, I don't have like a great answer in this, but like one interesting thing was like people always said Blue Sky could never have ads. And so I really rejected that idea because anything is possible, kind of to your point, like people find ways around things. So I built a prototype for running ads on custom feeds, but the ad I ran is the donation to Black Sky. And so like 0.01% of the time you view the feed, like it'll have a little pop-up of like, can you, if you find value, can you please contribute? And with a link to the Open Collective. And someone could easily do that with, you know, a sponsored link that could be BET. They could be paying me to like have these impressions. And then I track views on the feed and I can track who views the feed. And then I can track like, you know, maybe I show it to a certain subset of users based on other characteristic and interactions. And so I think following that, advertising became very feasible and like it could happen. And then now we see the CEO of Blue Sky saying that like their advertising is like on the table as like a way that they have funding. And that's concerning because of their position in the network. Like, I actually don't think like if a small player runs like a, you know, if they run, if I run a BET ad, like, you know, that just helps me funding potentially, right? And until it becomes super big. But like if Blue Sky and the position that they're in, this like everyone is on the, for context, like there's opportunities for exiting app protocol. That's kind of the intention is like, so if you don't like that Blue Sky is running ads, you switch the mobile app you use, you switch the app view. There's basically a bunch of different servers you could maybe in theory swap out from. There's like a theoretical exit out of it. And there's lots of debate around that. But like the concern there is that like, because of their position and power over the network, they could extract a large amount of value. So I think it's like a super valid concern. And with like any network that is, that you're trying to build your community on, because that could end up, you know, it depending on how independent you can be, that could end up affecting the experience of your community members and adversely so.
Rabble, did you have a response to this question as well?
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, in the early days, Twitter was effectively as open as Blue Sky. You didn't, like, there was no, you could just use your username and password, put it in any third-party Twitter app. There was no distinguishment between accessing Twitter via the web and accessing it via a third-party app. And most people, the Twitter experience was entirely via third-party apps. And what happened was Twitter decided that advertising was its business model and that there wasn't an alternative. And in order to meet the needs of advertisers, they needed to control the experience. And so they either bought or shut down all the third-party apps. And Blue Sky's team is way more committed to being open and trying to build out an open protocol. But you could easily see how it could be enclosed and shut down. And there's several different choke points. And so my worry is that the economic incentives of shutting it down will be too powerful for even the people, Jay and Paul and Y and the other folks working on Blue Sky, to be able to resist. They'll build a system that costs too much to run. And then the choice is close this commons down and run ads and meet the market needs around it, or have it fall apart. And they're going to choose to close versus have it fall apart. And even if they have absolutely the best intentions and they are really trying to build it well. So that's the worry. There, you know, everything ends up being advertising focused on some level because of the economic incentives. And I'll just leave that at that. I think Christine has a question.
Yeah, Christine and Kadala. Maybe let's group some questions just to wrap up because we're starting to run low on time. So maybe Christine, Kadala, and then we have one from Janai as well in the chat. So Christine, do you want to go ahead and then Kadala?
Yeah, I'd love to. So actually I have a question for Rudy because I think I said in the chat that Black Sky is the most promising thing for me on Blue Sky, but I've been personally worried since I started looking at AT Proto's design that it might not be sufficient for protecting users' needs, and you are doing the hardest work probably feasible to try to protect users' feeds on that system. I'm actually curious for you about how do you feel about kind of the AT proto phrase of distinguishing between speech and reach? And then the other thing is how optimistic are you feeling about credible exit?
What was the last thing you said?
How optimistic are you about credible exit also?
Thank you.
Trying to keep it quick. Freedom of speech, freedom, not freedom of reach. I mean, the way that manifests for me is like there are people like not just, you know, you can't, there was a really big moderation decision I had to make in the last couple of weeks where a famous rapper came on the platform and they were previously banned from from Twitter. And they kind of repeated the behaviors that they did previously on Twitter, on Blue Sky, and, you know, maybe with some prodding from the community. And then I had to make a very public decision to like label their content as misogynoir. And for me, like the freedom of speech, not freedom of reach, is like, I don't need your account taken down again. Like you can exist, but I want to protect my community from the language and behaviors that you have. So you can be completely cut off from this community. No one is obligated a platform, right? Like even you use the hashtag @toBlackSky, that doesn't mean you just get to be on a platform that is viewed 500,000 times a day. And so that is where freedom of speech, not freedom of reach, comes into play for me. There is some nuances, I think, where you may be referring to like some of the stuff going on this week where there's like an external bad actor who they, you know, out of freedom of speech reasons, they wouldn't shut the person's account down. I'm still like grappling with that. I'm actually speaking with Brian Newbold tomorrow on the Blue Sky team to talk about network governance, because I do think it's an interesting question, like, should this journalist be allowed to keep being on the platform? But my bigger concern is that there's the moderation tools don't really stop that person from getting access to people. And you don't, like, people, you know, folks don't know how to, they're all new to everything. They barely know how to use custom feeds. They don't really know how to use block lists or labelers and all these different things. And so that makes it really difficult. And optimism about credible exit, my whole goal is to like, people think that like with Black Sky, I'm just trying to lead the community with Black Sky. I'm really trying to build an alternative implementation but just has safety built into it. Because I want to be like compete with Blue Sky's implementation and have it be like purposely built with Black users and marginalized users in mind. And that will take time. So I always give the answer of like, if they're bad today, that's tough. If they're bad a year from now, like we'll have time and we'll have more resources and more people and stuff like that. So I think it's like a time-based thing.
Great. I just want to make sure that we hear from as many people as possible. Before Kadala on, we have one point from Juan Andres about asking about the friction, non-friction in the design of interaction. So questions about user experience design and the role of friction as opposed to trying to minimize friction in it. Chennai, are you able to say your question now?
Yeah, my question is basically, in all of your services and platforms and apps, you've been talking about security, privacy, and moderation, and of course, eventually some of that's going to crack some kind of way. How do we prepare users for that? Like, because it's a new world and people don't quite understand that yet. I mean, I think we're getting there, but like, how do we explain that to users? And then how do we still support community when community is inherently unsafe, basically?
Thank you. Yeah. Awesome. Awesome question. Kadala, can you wrap us up and then we'll just do a quick round with the speakers.
Sure. Thank you all for speaking today. I think something that is interesting to me is that all of you have like a community building experience or are very invested in communities and like social change in some way outside of this work as well. And so something that's very interesting to me about this is a question around like governance and like how do your various protocols and like with Black Sky as an implementation that's built on top of a protocol, how do you handle governance, thinking about like moderation on one hand in terms of like moderation is a specific tool under a larger subset of governance, but like, how are you making the decisions about how you will make certain moderation decisions, or how are you making decisions around like how people will be able to enter into a system or the direction that you're going to go in terms of like building out specific tools and things. I think the larger context around this question is thinking about like, oftentimes when we're talking about decentralization, we're talking about it from a like technological perspective. But I think that there is also something around like a political or governance decentralization in terms of making sure that once the system is decentralized, like it's important to also create mechanisms to make sure that power isn't consolidating that then eventually leads to a re-centralization of that system. So I'm just wondering, like, how are you guys thinking about that? How are you thinking about like the governance of these systems to make sure that they don't also just like fall back into that same trap later on?
I mean, I think that that's a tricky thing. It's one of the, that centralization and re-centralization issue and the ability to operate permissionless is part of why I stopped working within the Blue Sky ecosystem and switched to Nostr, even though socially I like what goes on in Blue Sky much better. It's much more of my people. But I wanted a network that you didn't need permission from anyone to participate in it. You can stand up your own parts of the network and you can run that. And there are certain points in the Blue Sky ecosystem around the username system of identity that are points of control because users asked for them. They wanted to be able to ban certain domain names as usernames. But that meant that the company has that kind of control and you don't like have the ability to govern your own self separately. And the Nostr ecosystem is a much more permissionless protocol where you can choose which relay servers you connect with or which ones you run in which apps. And that sounds great, but it also opens up a whole set of problems around abuse, around protecting communities. And so I think that there's no simple answer to this, but yeah, governance isn't an afterthought. It's like figuring that out is pretty central to why we're building on open protocols and decentralized tech, because that gives us a new way of handling governance that isn't falling back to the corporation that owns this makes the decisions.
Other speakers who want to respond to any of those points that were raised before we wrap up?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I'm going to just say that kind of broadly responding to all of these things, because in the intersection I've seen between them, there is a reason why we're running the Sprightly Institute as a 501c3 nonprofit, which is that we are trying to build technology where the interest and alignment of kind of keeping the organization alive is a bit separate from kind of what you'd normally see with like a revenue stream. And so we want our and one of the things that I think that in order to be able to build new foundations, in order to build the foundations that I want to see, it's actually really important to have an organization that cares a lot about values of diversity and all sorts of things like that, but in some ways is empowering different communities to be able to do those things themselves, and also is not trying to extract value from that community, right? Because it's if you really want stewardship that I think is healthy over new technical foundations, you can have some of that happen within for-profit institutions. But to build, you know, there is a reason why the internet was able to have the level of decentralization it did, partly because it was funded as a public works project, right? Awkwardly through a lot of it through the military, right? You know, like sneaking that military money off to the side. But you know, it was able to be something where you're able to put together funding for something that's in the public interest that a particular organization doesn't control. I think that's really important. And I think one of the things that I'm critical about on both Blue Sky and the contemporary Fediverse is that I am skeptical about the value long term. I think that broadcast media is important, but there's this view of kind of we have this big public global fire hose and that we're going to be able to build healthy community experiences on top of that. And I think it's been really struggling for a long time. And what I'm much more interested in intentional and contextual communication with community-oriented governance structures.
Fabulous. So Rudy, do you want to wrap us up?
Yeah, on the question of like, how do we support community? I think there's a lot of like, and that's where the community leadership piece goes into play. Like there's lots of, I feel like a lot of what I view my day-to-day, someone asked me what my day-to-day looks like a lot. And yesterday, a lot of it is just trying to like communicate to people like how this all works, because all these folks just showed up like in the last month. And so it's been really cool that they've understood it. There's like a community member who explained how decentralized apps work in like AAVE, and it was like a really popular thread and lots of people understood it. And it was like, I feel like there's times when people like make these, like journalists will make these comments of like, oh, everyone's here just to be like, everyone's on Blue Sky just because it's like the Twitter without Elon. But like, I feel like Black Sky, the average Black Sky user understands decentralized technology better than the average Blue Sky user, because they only use Black Sky. They call the app Black Sky. They don't even, like, they're logging into Blue Sky and they just call it Black Sky because they understand that it's like me behind it and the tech, and like, I control the algorithm, I control the moderation, like I'm in control of that. And that goes into the second question of the governance, because I would like to, I have made lots of decisions that have a lot of biases and have sweeping implications to it. I actually went through a study with a research group that made me kind of like, I'm very private about some of the moderation decisions because they would be very controversial, but having to explain them to another person kind of for the first time was a very interesting experience, and like why I decided on some things. And like, that's something I'd like to open up more to folks. It's really hard because it's like, when you talk about the public conversation piece, like, it's also that it's growing at a public conversation pace. Like I have to consider that Black Sky will have 10 million users at some point. And like that, how do you figure that out at the same time as you like figure out how you fund it? How do I onboard? I onboarded like 10, like a, well, six mods in the last couple weeks, and like someone burnt out, and like, how am I like fostering a community? And it's really just like figuring out it was really easy when it was really small and grassroots, but can you stay grassroots when something gets big? Can you make something more collectively governable as it gets bigger? That's the kind of stuff that I'm like thinking about, because otherwise I'm like frantically trying to figure stuff out as like something pops off.
Amazing. We could continue this conversation much longer, I'm sure, but we want to respect our speaker's time and also have some time for some internal conversation with the cohort. Thank you, speakers, so much for joining us. Share your appreciation. Let's let them know how grateful we are for their presence here. We'll stay in touch about the progress of this incubator project. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much. This was so special for our cohort and just this project. Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it. Y'all take care.
You have been listening to Looks Like New, a show that asks old questions about new technology. Looks Like New comes to you from the Media Economies Design Lab at the University of Colorado Boulder and is produced by Alexander Lipka. You can find us on the airwaves across Colorado's Front Range on KGNU Community Radio on the fourth Thursday of every month, and online at lookslikenew.net. We hope you join us next month, and thank you so much for listening.